Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Movie Boom Podcast, enjoy the show. Jackie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 146, brought to you by Mr. Boy Productions. My name is Zaki Hassan, and I am here with my co-pilot, the Groot to my rocket, if you will, Brian Hall.
I am Brian.
Hey, that's good. Look at that. I dropped the ball. You picked it up. Look at that. I like that. Very nice.
I am Brian.
I am Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
And we are here with a special guest. This is a movie film crossover where Glenn Greenberg, my frequent – if I have a second chair on Nostalgia Theater, it is Glenn Greenberg who has been with me for – Glenn, what is it? Seven, I think, episodes now?
That sounds about – well, five Star Trek movies, one Star Trek episode in the Incredible Hulk TV series. So, yeah, I think that's seven.
Seven episodes and counting, because this is, we have plenty more rows to hoe. Glenn Greenberg, who, again, my honorary second chair on Nostalgia Theater, has crossed through the multiverse to be on the regular Movie Film show. Thank you, Glenn.
My pleasure. This is like when Worf crossed over to Deep Space Nine.
Ah, there. Look at that. That's a deep cut right there. Brian's like, I will chuckle as if I know what you are saying.
No, it's funny because I was expecting an Avengers reference. I was like, oh, no.
Now, Glenn is, of course, my brother from another mother when it comes to Star Trek fandom. But, of course, he has a deep history with Marvel, which is why his presence for this show is so entirely appropriate. So, Glenn, maybe you can sort of share with us your own history, having been part of Marvel editorial in the 90s.
All right. Well, I was an editor and a writer. And in fact, when Marvel relaunched the Avengers in, I guess it was 1996, 97, yeah, with Kurt Busiek and George Perez, I was the assistant editor.
Wow.
So I was there for the big relaunch. I got to work with Kurt and George. And for those of you who are maybe Marvel movie fans but not Marvel comic book fans, that was a big deal. It was really bringing the Avengers back to a position of prominence at Marvel, and having George Perez, who's one of the greatest comic book artists ever, to commit to the book on a monthly basis was pretty staggering. And Kurt Busiek was well on his way to becoming one of the most prolific and popular writers at the time. So I was there for the first three issues, I believe, helping to, you know, figure out who the cast was going to be and what the storylines were going to be. And then I got promoted out of that office. So I moved on to do my own stuff. But I was there for that. And I'm proud to say I worked on the Avengers for a brief time. But my more prominent work at Marvel, certainly as a writer, was on Spider-Man, the Hulk, Star Trek, the Silver Surfer, Dracula. I believe as a writer, yes. As an editor, it was mostly Spider-Man and the New Warriors. My office helped relaunch Thor with John Romita Jr. and Dan Jurgens, and Iron Man with Kurt Busiek and Sean Chen.
Wow, very cool.
That was a real sort of halcyon era for Marvel, a second golden age for that line when we talk about sort of the hero's return era.
We needed to go through a very bad period to get to that very good period.
And Glenn, the shame of it is that the Avengers have never again had the popularity that they just dropped off the map.
Obscure.
Nobody talks about it. And by the way, the number one movie in the world right now is Avengers Infinity War. Never mind what I just said.
Where's that at? We'll certainly know by the end of this, but it was around 245 they're expecting.
It, as of now, it is the highest opening weekend in history, having bested Star Wars The Force Awakens. It's been extraordinary because this is something very similar to what we saw happen with Black Panther a few months ago, where the estimates kept going up.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So I think the original, and I think partially Disney was sort of, underselling it a little bit. They're like, yeah, you know, maybe 200, maybe 190, maybe 100. We'll be happy with 100. That was Disney, you know?
Yeah.
But in point of fact, I think they were saying 240 on Friday morning. And then as of now, it is, looking at somewhere between 248 and 250, which, if it does land there, then The Force Awakens 247.9 opening weekend. I mean, these are numbers that are just obscene. I mean, it is,
right.
You know, it's hard to even process the idea that one movie can make this much money in a weekend, but that tells you about where this universe is at in terms of just cultural acceptance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Would it be bad form to make a snarky comment about Justice League?
I went in this morning and I was like, I know a lot of our listeners are big DCEU fans. So I made a mental note. I was like, I'm going to be a good boy. and I will say this, Glenn. I mean, it made me sad that we've got Infinity War, which is just breaking all the records, and Justice League, which should be this for Warner Brothers, is this also ran, this afterthought. This, you know, it's a pebble in a shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And what a goddamn shame that is, you know?
Yeah, I was talking to quite a few people over the last 48 hours about just what a missed opportunity and just what wrong-headed thinking that enterprise was, no pun intended. You could see that this is what they wanted that movie to be.
Yes.
And they got there in certain ways, but Steppenwolf.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, everything that they did wrong with Steppenwolf, they did right with Thanos. I don't want to jump the gun, but it really is just staggering that the two different approaches.
No, you know, you're actually very right because this was actually an observation I made with my brother watching it yesterday. And Brian, you know, this is something we talked about with Justice League, where what I found so bothersome was you had this CGI creation who sounded like Kyron Hines. And remember, Brian, I said this at the time. I'm like, just put him in makeup or motion capture or something so that we can see him.
Yeah.
And when you look at Thanos, that is Josh Brolin.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's staggering. His stubble really is. And you even sometimes see his temples throbbing when he talks. Like, just these little details. Like, he is live.
It's a performance that really does serve as a through line. And that's the thing. I mean, obviously, Thanos in the comic book universe has a much higher level of prominence than Steppenwolf. Because even that's like a deep cut even for DC fans. But, you know, I mean, it's a shame. And again, I don't want to dive down that rabbit hole because there's just no point, you know.
Right.
Well, also, I wanted to add something that you posted the other day, Zachy. I just caught it fleetingly last night, but was it from the New Yorker? Some sort of article about a guy who didn't understand sequels.
Yes, on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, and you can explain that in a second. But my point also with that was going to be that this is 10 years it took to get here, and it you feel that and you're rewarded for it. You know, 10 years of hard work and good work.
It's
and
an
this
emotional,
is the culmination of it. And it.
It really is remarkable. It's just a remarkable achievement.
So just to catch people up on what Brian's referring to, the review of Avengers Infinity War in the New Yorker, at least the little Twitter excerpt, it says, in Avengers Infinity War, characters aren't introduced. They just show up, and their behavior is entirely defined by the template set for them in other movies. And I'm like, what the hell? You know?
I tweeted, I did
a quote response. I'm just like, this is obviously written by a person who's never seen a Star Wars sequel, a Star Trek sequel, a James Bond sequel, a Lord of the Rings sequel, a Harry Potter sequel, .. I mean, what a preposterous, yes, this is movie 19. So, they've already paved some road here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you have a film that, I mean, I saw it opening night. At like the second showing or something, and every single character that showed up got a round of applause from the audience. I mean, that is years worth of investment. You know, this is how this movie should operate, and the movie is rewarding the people who have come along on this journey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we'll get into our spoiler reactions, but before we even do that, Glenn, as somebody who you were in editorial, so you have had sort of a relationship with these characters both as a fan and as somebody who's shaping them. What has been your experience like seeing this this universe grow? So from Iron Man to now, as both fan and creator.
Without any exaggeration, it literally brings tears to my eyes because I'm seeing my childhood, my childhood dreams just being projected onto the big screen, and in a way that we never could have imagined. The entire time that I worked at Marvel from the beginning of the 90s to the end of the 90s, we would never could not have dreamed of this kind of achievement. I mean, when I was there, the Black Panther was going to be a mid-sized budgeted movie starring Wesley Snipes.
Right. Hmm. Yeah.
There's just no way it would have been what the Black Panther movie has done, has achieved. And so to see it being done so well, I mean, by the time I was leaving Marvel, the best that we could muster was David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury and some Generation X TV movie that aired on Fox that nobody at Marvel even watched. I mean, we came in the next day. Nobody had watched it.
Wow.
That was the best that we could expect at the time. Spider-Man was just a gleam in our eyes, the long gestating Spider-Man movie. So to see so many of these moments on screen – there were quite a few moments on Friday morning when I saw Infinity War where I was just getting very misty because I just couldn't believe seeing this the stuff that I grew up reading being done so well and with such care and respect and effectiveness.
Now, here this is something I've said before on online, and I'm sure you and I may have even talked about this. Do you feel like we're at a point where, as far as the continuing mythology moving forward, the movies have in effect become the tail wagging the dog? Like the movies have supplanted the comic books?
I think in terms of the public consciousness, yes. I don't think so in terms of creativity, because without the comics, we never would have had the Winter Soldier.
Right.
We never would have had Civil War. I think as long as the comics –
Guardians even, as they exist.
The Guardians, absolutely. My friend Bill Roseman played a key role in developing the Guardians of the Galaxy that we got in the movies, because he was the editor of that version of the comic book. Mm. Thor Ragnarok, without Planet Hulk – half the movie would have been missing. So I think that as long as Marvel keeps doing terrific stories with those characters, they will continue to be the R&D, for lack of a better term, or the creative driving force behind the movies, because the movie people are taking ideas and storylines from the comics. They still are. And it's not that they're not going back to the 1960s or 70s for most of these stories. They're going to just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, what you said is entirely apt. I mean, the idea that the books are R&D, you know, and it's almost like it's like they're the comics are like beta testing the concepts.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out what works, what doesn't. I mean, I was thinking about that moving forward because I saw this with my brother, and we're like thinking about gaming out what's going to happen in the future. And it's like the comics have already road tested what if Bucky becomes Captain America, and they've road tested what if Sam Wilson, the Falcon, becomes Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the movies are going to be like, hey, let's try that one, you know? That one worked pretty well. Let's do that. Like it's this embarrassment of riches to pick from.
Right.
That's something they choose to do, you know? But with that in mind, actually, I did have a question for you. Now, you said you were at Marvel from the early part of the 90s, through the late part. So were you there for some or all of the Infinity trilogy that Jim Starlin wrote?
I was there after the Infinity Gauntlet, I was there for Infinity War and Infinity Crusade.
Okay. And in the halls of Marvel at the time, so these three miniseries in a very general sense are the inspiration for what we're seeing right now in the films. Was that trilogy perceived in Marvel as a big effing deal?
I think that certainly the Infinity Gauntlet was, because you could feel the afterglow. Yes. I came in shortly after that series ended. I came in summer of 92.
Okay.
So you could feel the afterglow. I believe that with the Infinity War, I think that it was still considered a very important project, something that, you know, there was going to be a lot of heat to it. Everybody wanted to tie in and sort of get a piece of it. I think by the time we got to the Infinity Crusade, I think there was a certain degree of burnout.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I can say as a reader, I definitely felt that by the time we got to the third one.
Right, right. I mean,
is someone who doesn't know that, what do you mean, like, burnout? It's just been too much story, or too much?
Yeah, I think too much story. I think that it got to the point where, you know, the first one was, you know, terrific. It was groundbreaking. It really set the stage for some interesting ideas and concepts to pursue. I think the second one was considered, okay, this is a good follow-up. This is a good sequel. Okay, that's enough. You know, we get it. We get it. And I think the third one was kind of going to the well one too many times, plus the fact that it was a real headache to have to coordinate all of the books to tie in with an event like this and make sure that all the books are in sync. And when it's a really compelling, terrific, exciting, innovative story that everybody's on board for, it's kind of worth all that effort. But by the time you get to the third one, unless it's really kick ass, unless it's something that really maintains the momentum of that first one, it becomes a drag. And I just mm-hmm. don't think that the third one was as creatively strong as certainly the first one, you know, definitely the second one. You know, I mean, it's how many years later, and I still haven't recovered from the fact that George Perez didn't draw all of the Infinity Gauntlet, you know.
Right.
I still have regrets about that. So I think at that point, yeah, when I say burnout, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, been there, done that. It was the same writer. It was the same artist. And the overall concept of the third one, the Infinity Crusade, it was interesting, but it wasn't anything that was going to make people run to the stores. Maybe walk a little briskly, but not run.
and the neither the second nor third miniseries were about Thanos.
Right. That's true. They were more about Warlock, weren't they?
That's yeah. probably that's I you know, what's funny is I'm sitting here thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute, that's part of the reason. It didn't even occur to me until just now. But yeah, and worth pointing out, if you're listening and you're not familiar with the comics, the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries, which Glenn referred to, that's what this you know, this duology of films with the title Infinity War, it's actually a version of the Infinity Gauntlet miniseries. So if you are by chance, after seeing the film, being like, oh, and read the comic, don't read the comic called Infinity War. Until after you read the Infinity Gauntlet, which is what the movie, right? It's kind of like there was a miniseries called The Thanos Quest.
Yes.
And then the Infinity Gauntlet. And this movie is sort of, it's like, it's an adaptation of The Thanos Quest and like one or two issues of the Infinity Gauntlet. We are so, I'm listening to myself. I want to give myself a wedgie.
I was just going to say, this is something I would have wanted to listen to after watching the film, so I'm kind of enjoying this.
Yeah, the miniseries, The Thanos Quest, is basically the entire portion of the movie where Thanos is scouring the universe looking for the stones.
Mm.
The movie obviously does its own way. I mean, the movie is like a nominal adaptation. So, I mean, the movies are doing their own thing, and that's worth recognizing. But if you want to see the roots of it, that's what you want to check out.
Exactly.
That's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. So with that in mind, now Glenn, give us your non-spoiler reaction to the film, and then we'll hear Brian, and then we can get into some spoilers.
I thought it was terrific. I thought the pacing was incredible. I thought that they managed to take all of these characters and all of these story threads that have been going on for 10 years now and managed to weave them all together in a way that it didn't feel overwhelming, and it didn't feel like it wasn't confusing in any way. The tone was just right. There was humor where it was appropriate. A lot of drama. Really interesting takes on the characters. If I have any criticisms, it was that there were a few scenes that were a little too dark, so it was hard to quite to see what was going on.
Oh, you mean literally dark? Okay.
yeah, literally dark. I was like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of moments in the action scenes where I thought that the editing was a little too choppy to the point where, again, I couldn't quite follow the action. And it was only when I saw the aftermath of the action that I could figure out what had just happened. Those are very minor criticisms. But there were surprises. It didn't exactly go the way I thought it was going to. In some ways it did. And there was one surprise moment where I actually blurted out, "I knew it!" So I guess we could talk about that in the spoiler section.
Nice. Well, Brian, I have been waiting to hear your thoughts on this. As longtime listeners know, Brian and I, we have a policy that, especially for big movies like this, we do not discuss at all anything. We do not communicate. We recuse ourselves from discussing the film via text or anything else until we are on mic. So I am legitimately. But I you have seen the movie twice.
Yes.
Which maybe is kind of a spoiler about what you think of the movie.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, I'll begin by saying I really loved it. And for context, for people who don't listen frequently, I'm a casual Marvel movie fan where I really enjoy them and I watch them when everyone goes and I think they're great. And then I don't tend to revisit them or even think about them very much. But then when the next one comes, I'm like, oh, great. And then I watch that and I enjoy it. And then I move on to the next one. And so I went opening night for this and I expected to enjoy it. And it was I realized when I was in there in this enormous theater, I mean, everyone had a Marvel shirt on.
Huh.
And I saw people with these women with action figures in their hair, like they'd done their hair in this certain way. And they were one girl even dyed her hair different colors, like a portion of blue. And it had a Captain America little trinket in it. And it was just amazing. I was loving it. And
can I just tell you, I was a teenage comic book geek in the wrong era.
Right? I mean, and I was feeling that because I was like, they are responding to this film how I feel about Star Wars. And so it was one of those things where I was like, okay, so like these just aren't my Star Wars. Like Star Wars is my Star Wars, but like I enjoy these, right? And then as the film was going on, what I was sort of saying earlier with the whole 10 years of investment, I felt like all those films that I just enjoyed over the years, I feel like this movie completely rewarded fans if I'm to, you know, understand what I saw the response in that theater, but also me. It set up all the dominoes and then it knocked them all down in the most satisfying and enjoyable and emotional way. And I was really, really into it. More than I have been with any of these movies, actually. And I know I can back that up because having seen it a second time, I think I enjoyed it more. So
I'm with you there.
Yeah. I mean, I have to just echo everything Glenn said, but it's the balance that's executed in this movie between, you know, the laughs, but also the really heavy emotions and the action and all the characters. I mean, I think I read somewhere where someone commented that it was just too overstuffed. And I'm like, you know, no. Like, I mean, when you have this many characters, I dare anyone to do better. Portioning all of this out and making you know all these people in all these different locations and understanding what's going on and being equally invested in all of those separate adventures. I mean, this is just the best version of this thing. I was really – I love it. Oh, that was great.
Wow. Okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
As far as my non-spoiler reaction, I mean, again, it's a lot of ditto. Yeah, there's nothing much I can add. except, you know, just offering my feelings as, you know, as Brian said, Brian's a casual fan. Anybody who listens knows I am not a casual fan. I mean, this universe, the Marvel universe specifically, has been something very special to me in terms of the comics all my life. It's something I literally grew up with, and very much echoing what Glenn was saying, it's not something that would have even occurred to me as a fan of the comics, right? It was one of the, you read the comics and you see all the characters teaming up. You know, there was a series in the 80s called Secret Wars, where it's every Marvel character, or major character at the time, and as a kid reading that comic, you're like, well, this is the type of story you get in a comic. And even as like a 7-year-old, I'm like, of course you would never see this in a movie, you know?
Right.
And
right.
So the fact that here we are, where the universe that I grew up with has now been realized to such a degree that you look at it and you're like, that's what I grew up with. It's not a version of it. They've tweaked it here and there, but this is it. And so for me, I'm like, I'm on cloud nine just watching it. I mean, from the jump, when I see Doctor Strange talking to Tony Stark, I'm like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, it's like reading the Infinity Gauntlet comic book. So, having seen it twice now, one thing I'll add is that what Brian said is very apt, that I found it a richer experience the second time, but also the second time for me was with my kids, and I've mentioned previously that I went through, and you know, since the beginning of the year, we watched every single MCU movie, and the payoff for me was seeing it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing them so fully engaged, and they're just, you know, all the intricacies. I mean, I quizzed my 7-year-old, and I was like, hey, what did you think? Oh, I really liked it. Oh, well, what happened in the movie? And I want to hear him describe the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's describing it on a much deeper level than I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. So like, just, well, I don't want to have spoilers before this, so
spoilers.
So I ask my 7-year-old, I'm like, did it make you sad? And he's like, a little bit. I'm like, what part made you sad? He's like, oh, when Gamora died.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, why did that make you, or I was like, why did Gamora die? He's like, oh, well, Thanos threw her off the mountain. I'm like, why did he do that? And he's like, well, the Red Skull told her he had to sacrifice somebody he loved, and he really loved Gamora.
Right.
And it was hard for him to do that. I mean, he's just, you know, and I'm like,
damn. Yeah.
Like, he really did plug in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's when I'm like, you know, these movies just play. Like, that's the reason this is so effective. And we can be cynical about it, like James Cameron, because James Cameron's like, hey, I want to set myself up as, like, the universe's heel right now. Right. He's like, I'm going to see how unlikable I can make myself before Avatar 2 comes out.
Right.
He's like, I hate Avengers, y'all. You know, he's like a Jersey Shore cast member, James Cameron.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, he's the Snooki of big budget cinema. So he's like, I've got Avengers fatigue. Like, there's other stories to tell. And then he's like, I'm making Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5 and Terminator, you know, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So what's up, right?
I just keep picturing him ready to, like, rip his shirt off, you know, like Jersey Shore style, just sort of like just at the ready to like rip his shirt off and start a fight with whoever's closest to him.
But the thing is, it's like you watch this and you're like, because here's what he said that irked me. He's like, I'm waiting for these movies to start failing or something to that effect. And I'm like,
you know what? And that's why this movie is worth all the praise it's getting, because it should. This should yes. topple eventually, but like they built to their end game and they did it.
Yes.
So it's a shame that James Cameron can't just sit back and enjoy it with us.
Mm-hmm. And it's weird too, because he's a big comic book fan. He was going to do Spider-Man back in the 90s.
Right.
So it's weird.
Yeah, but he was going to do it his way. I mean, I actually kind of dread what James Cameron would have done with Spider-Man.
Hmm.
Well, there was a treatment, right, that was out there? I haven't read it. You guys have read it?
I haven't.
I skimmed it. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I know about it, Glenn, is that the organic web shooters, he came up with that idea.
Mm.
He did. And from what I understand, the first thing he said when he came on to the Spider-Man project, the first thing he said was, well, first thing we got to do is redesign that costume.
All right.
Oh, boy. Okay.
There's your red flag, right?
There you go.
Okay, so we may have dodged a bullet there, but the broader point of what he was saying, I think it would be applicable for another movie, because to me, this, you know, as you're saying, like the emotional reaction in the room I saw it with yesterday, which was the wide audience and not a critic audience, I was like, man, you can't fake that. I mean, I could hear people mm-hmm. crying.
Mm-hmm.
My niece, yeah. who is 14, and she's just like mainlined these movies. She was like a wreck at the end of this movie.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you can't fake that, you know?
That reminds me at the very end, now that we're past spoilers here, at the end of the credits when it says Thanos will return, my whole audience booed. I was like, I don't know. I wanted to say one thing to build off of what you said. When you said that it was a thrill for you to see Doctor Strange and Iron Man together, or Tony Stark together.
Yes.
It made me think, in many iterations, that would be enough. We're like, well, yeah, it wasn't written very great. But like, dude, I got to see Doctor Strange and Tony Stark together.
Right.
And it made me realize, like, that's why we can be so effusive about this movie, is it's not enough for them to be together. It's also that they are written very well and we enjoy seeing their interactions and the acting. I mean, with Benedict Cumberbatch and Robert Downey Jr., you know, talking about like wizards and,
Well, I tweeted this yesterday. I said, I will pay IMAX 3D ticket prices for 2 hours of Tony Stark and Dr. Strange sitting in a Starbucks, just talking snark to each other.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, when you have everything, writing, directing, actors, whatever. I mean, I really enjoy it, obviously, but this must just be a gift for you guys. You know, I can't even imagine it.
It's actually very funny because at the end of the film, I mean, we're kind of jumping around, but we reach the point where Thanos snaps his fingers and, of course, people start blinking out of existence. So we're mm-hmm. leaving the theater, and my 9-year-old, Brian.
Yes.
He's like, why did Spider-Man disappear? And why did Falcon, like, why them? And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just random. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, Thanos, just like he snapped his fingers and just randomly, whoever, he didn't choose, just whoever disappeared. And he's like, and my 9-year-old, he's like, you know, if I was Thanos, I'm like, oh boy. He's like, I know who I'd make disappear. I'm like, okay. Of course you would. Right. I should mention this because I think I'm on his shit list right now, my 9-year-old. This is like a brief tangent. So last week, I took my kids to get their haircuts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so my oldest, his he needed a haircut because his hair is such that it just grows straight up. So he was looking like Hammer from the 90s, right? Looks ridiculous. So he needs a haircut. And so I'm like, all right, guys, get in the van. We got the four boys. And my second, he's like super anal retentive about his hair already, this kid. I don't know who he's trying to impress, right? Huh. And he's like, no, I don't want to cut my hair. Can you take me later? I'm like, man, I'm not running a shuttle service for haircuts. Everybody get me, you know? That's all I'll be doing then, right?
Yeah.
So we go to the barbershop, and my 9-year-old, the whole time, he's like, I don't want to cut too much off. Like, tell them to, like, he's being super. I'm like, dude, just relax. I'll tell them to just trim it. Okay. So, mm-hmm. so we get there. My oldest sits down. The 9-year-old, they both sit down, and the other two are in like the second wave. And so for my oldest, the stylist is like, how do you want to cut his hair? And I'm like, not nice and short, trim it as much as you can. For my 9-year-old, the barber asked the same thing, and I'm still talking to the first one. I'm like, nice and short, and then I turn around because the other two are running around. I'm like, sit down, just settle down. And by the time I turn around, the stylist for my 9-year-old thought I was talking to her.
Oh. When,
so half of his hair is like, it's just gone.
Oh, no.
I mean, he looks like Thanos. Okay.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh my God. And so I run up and I'm kind of like, can you blend it a little? Like, there's nothing to blend, right?
Right.
And so I'm and she's like, okay, I'll try. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm standing behind him. Okay. And so I'm behind him. He's got his little, you know, the cape on, whatever. And he's looking in the mirror at me. And the glare on his face, I'm like, this is like Lex Luthor's origin.
I was going to say, I could picture you see like his door open a crack and you slowly, you know, open it and you see him trying to craft a glove and Infinity Gauntlet.
So when he's like, I know who I'd make disappear, I'm like, I think I might be on that list. I'm not sure.
I love those stories. I worry that there's new ones continually, but
they keep, yeah, this is a running record. But anyway, back to the film. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No.
So the film as it builds, I think you mentioned about how they don't spend a lot of time expositing. And I think to me, that's a feature, not a bug. Right. But I do mm-hmm. wonder how it would play to more casual fans. I mean, it really, like, from moment one, it's assuming that you're 18 movies in, you're good.
Yeah, and I wonder, because I think of my parents, actually, because they – I bring this up, but, like, my parents love these movies, which is, like, so cool and interesting. And I know they don't watch all of them. I think they watch the majority of them, but they might have missed one or two. So it's one of those things where I was taking a mental note. I was like going to check with them and be like, all right, make sure you saw Thor 3 first. And did you see Doctor Strange? And it's kind of a funny roadmap to make sure, you know.
That's really funny.
I recently made a list for my sister of all the movies that she needs to watch before she sees this one in order so that she really gets the full experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what would you consider essential viewing for Infinity War?
I'm sorry?
What would you consider essential viewing?
Pretty much everything but The Incredible Hulk and Ant-Man.
Yeah. I think you're right. I love that, like, that's the homework, 17 movies or 16 movies. Like, here's your, this is what you got to do, you know? But I'll tell you something, and I tweeted this too. I'm like, because we were doing our rewatch, and we watched Thor Ragnarok the morning of. So we finished Thor Ragnarok, and then we piled into the van, headed to the theater. And I love that literally it just Thor Ragnarok ends, and then this begins, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But I come home, and I'm like, dude, I'm ready to start the rewatch all over again, you know?
Yeah.
I would gladly have done that.
You know what I was worried about when the movie first started? We're in spoiler territory now, right?
We really are.
Okay. I was afraid, because I loved Thor Ragnarok, and I was really afraid that the beginning of this movie, it was going to turn this movie into Alien 3.
Yes.
And that Aliens ended on such a triumphant note, and all of that is ripped away in the first, 2 minutes of Alien 3?
Yeah.
And I was afraid that this was going to have that kind of effect on it, and it didn't. And that's a real testament to just how well this was done.
Mm. Yeah, it's they mention that that like half of – they were able to get half of the people on the ship off.
Right.
So we can assume that like Valkyrie and, you know – Korg, I'm assuming Korg. God bless Korg. I hate to see that him gone. but more than anything, I'll tell you what I liked was the first few moments of this film put a pin on Loki's arc in the MCU in a way that's pleasing and redemptive. You know, in other words, it doesn't undo the journey we went on with him in the last movie.
Mm-hmm.
He dies a hero in his own way.
Right.
And
right.
I really did like that because I think, you know, I mean, that, I think the beauty of the character as constructed is you're like, oh man, is he joining Thanos now? Like, is it, you know?
Right.
And that would be perfectly in character for him also.
Right.
Had he done that. But I like that they built on his character development and allowed the character an exit in a way where you're like, okay, that ended, but it was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it then pushes Thor's arc. Oh, and by the way, and Heimdall dying, I think the fact that Heimdall dies and you feel bad about it,
yeah,
that says something.
Yeah,
you know.
On the same token, I'm not so sure we've seen the last of Loki.
Yeah, I mean, I think this universe is going to continue on. I'm sure eventually down the line, I think they'll wait a bit. And by the way, I think if we do see him again, I don't think he'll be Tom Hiddleston. I think Tom Hiddleston is done.
Oh. Mm. That's heartbreaking.
It is. He's so good. But, I mean, he gave an interview to the BBC this past week, which sure sounded like an exit interview. It was very much like, you know, I had a great time. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I mean, it wasn't like I'm done with this now, but it was definitely a sense of, like, he spoke with a sense of closure. So nothing is forever, obviously. But I do – I mean, the fact that Thanos specifically is, like, no resurrections this time. That's right. I mean, he might as well have turned to the audience and said that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And that is sort of the reality of these having these as movies where just actors grow older or they don't want to do them, and it would be nice to continue in all the ways you'd imagine in your mind, but it's just,
you know, I couldn't help but think that as much as that was sort of like a nod to the audience, it was also a reference to a Thanos story that Jim Starlin wrote about 10, 15 years ago, where the whole point of the story was that once this was done, once Thanos' master plan was enacted, that going forward there would be no more resurrections in the Marvel Universe, in the comic books, that characters weren't just going to be like going through this revolving door of death and resurrection, death and resurrection. Hmm. And of course, it didn't take. Yeah. But that was the plan. I mean, that was what Jim Starlin was trying to set up with this one particular story. And I just couldn't help but think that it was too much of a coincidence for the same character to say the same thing, you know?
Mm. Wow. See, I wouldn't have even caught that reference.
Yeah.
That's really funny. So let's talk about Thanos as a character, because I just on Twitter the other day, I just threw it out there. I'm like, favorite MCU bad guy, go. And I mean, there were quite a few responses, and overwhelmingly it was Thanos. Number one, do you guys agree with that? And number two, why do you think that's the case, that people have really taken to this character in this way? Glenn, why don't you start?
I still have a real fondness for Loki. I still would probably put him at number one, but Thanos comes damn close. And I think that the reason why people have responded to him in such a way is because they did exactly what they needed to do, and they did exactly what they hadn't done with so many of their other villains. This guy is complex. They spent time with him, building him up, showing the different facets of him. Mm-hmm. He's brutal. He's merciless. He's an SOB. He's sardonic. He's a dick. But it was so important, that scene between him and Gamora. It was so important because it built his character.
When she's a child, you mean?
No, when he's – well, that was great. That was terrific.
Yeah.
But for me, the more meaningful one is before he sacrifices
her.
Oh,
sure. Right.
And I just remember – it was only 48 hours ago, but I remember sitting in the theater saying, oh, my God. I mean, this versus – and I hate to make that comparison again, this versus Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Or Ares, or even just so that I'm not bashing the DC movies, but Malekith in the Thor Dark World movie,
yeah.
And most of the other villains, they really built him up in this movie alone and gave him such complexity and so many different dimensions, and you may not be rooting for him, but you understand him.
Brian?
Yeah, well, I would go with Thanos too, and I think also it's the benefit of being the most recent movie. Even I'll begin with the obvious ones, but technology. I think you mentioned earlier the performance, like this is a Josh Brolin performance.
Yes.
And that's absolutely true. And I think you recognize him in the face. And so by that, I mean, there's great acting. And so also, again, just on a technical level, a lot of times when you have these CG characters, their voice sounds like they're somewhere else.
Right.
Or, you know, it doesn't sound like they're in the room with everybody. And I was impressed that he just always felt present wherever he was and with whoever he was interacting with. But beyond that, yeah, he has, as most good villains do, you know, he had understandable motivations, even though they were upsetting goals.
Yeah.
You know, and so to go back to that Gamora moment, I just thought, why he's such a great villain is that moment was truly disturbing. And it had a lot of resonance. But at the same time, as he was sacrificing his daughter, I totally believed his tears.
Right.
And I believed it on a story level, and I believed it on a performance level. And it was just, yeah. So I think he's just, for me, far and away, my favorite villain.
If I could just interject for 1 second. I contributed, I don't know if it's out yet, but I'm a contributing writer to Entertainment Weekly's special edition that's devoted solely to Avengers Infinity War.
Oh, and, cool.
Yeah, and I interviewed some of the behind-the-scenes people, the costume designers and the prop masters and the weapon, you know, all that kind of stuff. And one of the people that I interviewed, and at the time I thought it was just, you know, sort of company-fed hype that she was prompted to say. But she really went out of her way to say what an incredible job Josh Brolin did and that what the animators did in terms of bringing that performance to life. And again, when I was interviewing her, I kind of said, yeah, this is just pre-release hype.
Right.
She nailed it.
Yeah. And by the way, that scene worth mentioning, the nice little surprise in that scene on that planet is that we see the Red Skull again.
That was my I knew it moment.
Oh, really? You knew that was the Red Skull?
I knew at the end of Captain America, the First Avenger, that the Red Skull was not dead.
Sure.
Mm.
I knew that he would be showing up at some point or another. And so when when the character showed up wearing the hood, I thought because it evoked what they ultimately did with the original Nick Fury in the comics. He's sort of like in space now wearing tattered
yes, that's right.
Cloak and everything. But I knew it couldn't be Nick Fury. So I was like thinking, who else could it be? And of course I said, of course, it has to be the Red Skull.
That was one of those, like, I definitely had the same sense as you at the end of Captain America. I was like, well, there's no body, so he's not dead. But by the time we got here, I'm like, it didn't even occur to me. So a nice surprise, especially because in the theater, people are like, holy shit.
Yeah. Same.
And I love that. And I was reading online that the character was created digitally, but he is voiced by not Hugo Weaving, who made very clear he had no interest in coming back to the Marvel Universe. He's voiced by Ross Marquand from The Walking Dead.
Yes, Aaron from The Walking Dead.
He's Aaron. Yeah, you know who that is, Brian?
No.
I don't know if you've seen this. He's got this shtick where he does micro impressions of various people.
Oh, I have seen that.
Okay.
I've seen that video on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah, Harrison Ford is great. He has a great, like, George Clooney. Like, it's like George Clooney trying to put a straw in his mouth. Like, it's like really random, specific stuff.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, that's a perfect guy.
Yeah, and it was weird because as I was listening the first time, I was like, it sounds like Hugo Weaving, but like maybe he's out of practice doing that accent. Like, there was something just like a degree off.
Hmm.
I actually thought it sounded better.
Well, but it did. To me, it was like it didn't exactly sound like Hugo Weaving. So I was like, is that Hugo Weaving? And then the second time, I know it's not him. So I'm like impressed at how close he sounds like Hugo Weaving.
I didn't know it wasn't Hugo Weaving at first. I was like, oh, good, they got the original guy back.
Yeah.
And I didn't find out until after the fact. But that made me even more impressed because I was fooled. And on the same token, I thought that the voice was actually it just sounded better as the Red Skull to me.
That I agree with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I certainly hope that you know that's seeding the terrain for at some point bringing the character back for real. You know.
Yeah.
If that is something in the cards. Other moments, Brian, that jumped out at you or that you found effective, having not seen it twice.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say I'm a big fan of the Guardians movies, and I saw someone somewhere say this felt sort of like Guardians 2.5.
Yeah,
yeah, because
they're prominently. Oh, is that you? Yeah, I saw some Joker.
Wrong universe.
But no, I love those guys. So it was really fun seeing them scattered about and watching them interact with Thor. And I think one of our discussions about one of the Guardians movies were like, how's that going to work when they mix with Tony Stark and
right.
just trying to imagine it. And it's like, oh, it will go really well.
That's you know, it's funny because yeah, the thought I had, and this applies to the Guardians, and actually all the non-Avengers characters who feature in this, there's no glorified cameos here. Everyone has, you know, everyone has really something substantial. I mean, Peter Quill has a full arc in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and because my thought, when they first announced, they're like, oh, we were going to have this character and this character and this character. It made me think of, like, in the comics where you would see, like, for one panel, here's Spider-Man being like, what's going on? And then, like, we never see him again.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was going to be a lot of that. I thought it would be these really quick cutaways, and then you know, you put that shit in the trailer, and it's like, look at all the people in it. And you're like, well, come on, you know? But again, yeah, like you guys said, each of the Guardians play a key role in this. Doctor Strange is like...
That blew my mind.
I mean, this is like Doctor Strange 1.5, yeah. You know?
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's very... And you know what? I thought that Cumberbatch was better, even better here than he was in Doctor Strange.
Yes, I agree with that. Well, and I think, honestly, part of that is... he has the opportunity to bounce off these other characters, and right. So you get a sense of Strange's role specific to him. Like, what does Doctor Strange bring to this world of heroes that's unique?
Yeah.
And I think that's helpful. And plus, you know, we're at a point now where he's more firmly established as doing what he does, and so you see that extra level of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
In his characterization, I really, I'll tell you, this is something that the first time I watched it, this was a question mark for me, where I was like, wait a minute, why? And then the second time I was like, oh, duh, because they're on that like ring shaped ship, right? And it's Tony Stark, Doctor Strange, and Spider-Man, right? And Doctor Strange has the time stone. And Strange tells Tony Stark, he's like, if it's a choice between saving you and the kid and saving the stone, I will not hesitate to let you die.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the film, as we're winding down, we have the big climactic fight between Stark and Thanos. One of the best moments in the movie, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And we think this is it. Tony Stark, his number's been punched, you know?
Yep.
And at that moment, Doctor Strange is like, wait, spare his life and I'll give you the stone, right? Mm-hmm. And Tony Stark says what I was saying. What are you doing? Don't. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Are you crazy? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time it occurred to me that, you know, there's that moment where he's like, I've looked at every possible 14 million timelines and there's only one where we defeat him.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he knows that. He knows Tony Stark has to live to defeat Thanos.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I thought more about that on the second viewing.
Right?
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Right? Because it doesn't, because they set it up in the beginning. I will let you die. Well, then why, unless he knows something? And he even says it, right? Because when it all starts, when Thanos disappears, he says, we're in the end game now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, and then he right before Strange gets dusted, he says it was the only way.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, that's what part two is going to come down to. It's going to come down to whatever's going to happen with Thanos is going to involve Tony Stark.
Of course.
Right.
Of course, yeah.
And it's yeah. That's one of those things where, again, the first time, that was like, why would you do that? How stupid. And then, of course, that was my ding, you know, mm-hmm. a little Infinity Stone glue over my glowed over my head. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, sorry, I'm just like, we're like jumping around because honestly, there's just so many like cool moments.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, for me, both times, I mean, I was grinning ear to ear both times, but both times I saw it when I was like, just felt like clapping was when Thor gets his axe.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And it shows up on Wakanda. I'm like, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That whole thing pairing up him and Rocket was a lot of fun, and Groot.
I love how he keeps calling him Rabbit.
Yeah.
I love the pairings. I really I mean, Brian beat me to the punch. I was going to say, I love the concept of pairing Thor with Rocket and Groot. I mean, just brilliant.
Yeah.
I never would have thought in a million years that, Spider-Man would have been paired, you know, for most of the movie with Iron Man and Doctor Strange, and that he'd be going into space. I never thought that would have happened. And I have to say, you know, I have my cynical nature. I've been around the block in terms of all this kind of stuff for a long time. But when Spider-Man disappeared, and I know they're making a sequel, for crying out loud.
Right.
I got choked up.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very, very touching scene.
And I think, first of all, Glenn, you're not alone, because just based on the crowd I was with yesterday, that was when they like lost it. When here's Peter Parker, he's just a kid, and he's like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a great, again, if we look at the MCU as the journey of Tony Stark, what a great moment to push him into the final phase, assuming it is his final phase.
Yeah.
You know, super effective. And by the way, the love story of the Vision and the Scarlet Witch is something that, obviously, as a longtime comic book reader, is something that Glenn, you and I just sort of associate with these characters. But I really like that they realized that in the film,
mm-hmm.
in a way that gave it pathos.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, at the very, very beginning, we were talking about how it balances tone so well. I mean, yeah, that ending, it becomes – the movie was with so much bombast, you know, up until that point. And then it just suddenly gets quiet, and it's very haunting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, sad when I left the theater, but I was surprised how much it lingered with me. I thought about it again throughout the night, and I was like, oh, man. Like, it wasn't like whenever, like I said at the beginning, you know, with a Marvel movie, I'm like, great, you know, can't wait for the next one. But this one, I was like, well, no, I want to know what happens now.
That's right.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's a great cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And even though I know they're going to make a Black Panther too, you know, but
yeah, and a Spider-Man
what's
too.
What's going on? Yeah, like I really want to know. And it didn't take away from how it made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. it's very funny because definitely. The first time I saw it, that the ending, I think I was just overthinking it, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, you've left us on a cliffhanger that doesn't – it feels like a fake cliffhanger in the sense that, like you said, like the stakes are so big that you know they have to reset it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I'm – like so in other words, the idea that, oh – we've killed off all these characters. Oh my gosh. Well, you know, on an intellectual level that's not going to be the case. But then, you know, what I realized is like, well, that concern is a purely temporal one, in the sense that we're sort of now we're in this interregnum where we got to wait a year between movies. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to matter like forever. Do you see what I'm saying? Like it's
mm-hmm.
from, and the moment part two comes out, this is one movie, and what that's an irrelevant concern.
Right. Mm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, because the question becomes, like, what are the real stakes? And I was having this conversation with Dennis Willis, who's a fellow member of the SF Critics Circle, and we were just kind of talking about the stakes. And what I said was none of those dusted people at the end are like, I don't consider those part of the body count. Because that's going to be undone. You can have reasonable assuredness, right? So to me, it's like the real stakes are the people who we actually lost and how much that matters. So Gamora, and you know, although I fully expect we'll see Gamora again, but like Loki and Heimdall. So then I'm like, well, whatever stakes there are going to be aren't going to be in the next one,
right?
It's like who do we lose trying to get back everyone we've already lost?
Yeah, there's going to be a price to. I mean, we know we're getting at least some of these characters back, but there's going to be a price that needs to be paid.
Yes.
And I think you just have to look at the contracts of certain actors.
It's true.
You know,
I mean, it's. I think people went in expecting the emotional punch of. You know, I'm trying to think of like you watch The Force Awakens, right? In The Force Awakens, we watched three whole like star systems get obliterated, and that doesn't matter as much as watching Han Solo turn into shish kebab,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and so I don't think Infinity War Part One gives us a punch like that on that same on a Han Solo level, but I think that's coming.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Sure,
oh, yeah.
Sure.
That's my guess anyway. You know.
Yeah, well, and it was and like you say, thinking about it intellectually, there's one way to respond to it, but definitely both times I saw it, I mean, there was a hush over the audience. So whatever it wanted you to feel in that moment, it happened.
Like Glenn said, I mean, we know, okay, well, it's obviously Disney is not going to be like, well, Spider-Man is dead now, but that doesn't make that doesn't make watching him turn to dust any less fraught, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, Glenn, you were saying.
I was just going to say, I think it's very telling that although he had some terrific moments, and I actually teared up when he appeared on screen for the first time in the movie, Steve Rogers does not have a major sort of, you know, thing going on in this movie. The focus is not on him. I think it's very telling. I think he's going to get the lion's share of the attention in the next one, and for a very major reason, you know, for good or ill. I think that we're going to see a lot of him. I think we're going to see, as you said, a lot of Tony Stark. But I think this the next one is going to be as much Captain America's movie.
I would expect that. Yeah, I you know definitely when we talk about the comic books. I mean, one of my favorite comic book moments ever goes to Infinity Gauntlet, where the entire field of battle has been, you know, it's basically Thanos has wiped out every hero, and it's just Captain America squaring off against Thanos. This and the way it's staged, you know, the way Ron Lim drew it, and just everything. I mean, it's one of those things that, as a, I mean, when did that come out? Like 91.
So I was 91, like, yeah, 91.
So I was like 10, you know, but boy, did that stay with me, you know.
Yeah,
and I would expect we'll get something comparable with this next movie. I mean, I have no idea what they're going to be doing, but it says something about how familiar and beloved these characters are. That, you know, Glenn, like you said, Captain America shows up, and it's, I mean, people applaud, people get teary eyed because it's staged so well. You just see Chris Evans step out of the shadows, and your heart races a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that moment when we first see him and the Avengers theme starts to, you know, starts to build up. Man, there's that 10 years again, Brian, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of that, I really enjoyed the score, Alan Silvestri.
Yeah.
There were a couple moments, you know, it was just servicing what it needed to do. And then there were – every now and then there were these little flourishes or sparkle. And I the first time I saw it, I didn't know who scored it. And I was like, oh, this feels like a mature score, you know. and then at the end when I saw it was Silvestri, I was like, ah.
Of course.
Happy that guy's still doing his thing.
Yeah. I mean, he created – I mean, you know, people critique the MCU's sort of lack of memorable music. And I actually would disagree with that. But
yeah.
The MCU has produced this piece of music, the Avengers theme, that has just as much iconic resonance as the Harry Potter theme or the, you know, or the Indiana Jones theme, where you hear a few notes from it and you know exactly what it is.
I think it might sneak up on some people, Like they might think even that they don't know it, and then you play those notes, they're like, oh yeah, 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 Avengers.
Right.
You know, it's yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. You know, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, did Alan Silvestri do the first Captain America movie?
He did, yeah.
Okay, because I feel that way also about Captain America's theme.
I totally agree. Mm. Yeah, because that's a piece of music that you've heard it repeatedly in other movies, even the ones he hasn't done, they bring that in.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's like an ongoing like thing that people say, and I disagree with that because I'm just using my kids again as an example. I mean, I have like a MCU themes playlist on my phone. And they're like, play the Marvel themes, you know? Like they know them, you know. My 9-year-old, he's like super musically inclined. So he'll like, you can just play a few notes of any of these themes, and he'll be like, that's Captain America Winter Soldier. Like, how the hell do you
know? Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Black Panther. Now this does not feel like Black Panther 1.5. That's not to say he doesn't have a significant role, but I mean, it feels like this does feel like a guest appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. It's hard. It is the bouncing act, and I realize too, this is one of two movies, so yes. Who knows what we're gonna get. But I did feel like I got to spend a comfortable amount of time in places that I enjoyed, like in Wakanda, for example. I mean, maybe not with him specifically, but I enjoyed being back in Wakanda and having that battle there.
It's funny that you say that, because there's that moment where, like, you know, the alien debris is hitting the shield, and Bucky's like, man, I love this place. And I'm like, he's speaking for the audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You
know? I like that. Here's what I liked about Wakanda, the fact that we're not just like, oh, hey, it's T'Challa, and he's like, yeah, let me talk to Shuri, but we never see Shuri, and you know, I like the fact that there's Shuri and there's Okoye, and there's M'Baku. Like, I love that Winston Duke is here as M'Baku,
right?
Because it again, this is the advantage when you sign these people up for like 9 movies.
Yeah,
you can be like, hey, let's actually expand the canvas here and have a significant, you know, let's really make it feel like a universe.
Yeah, it was similarly, a moment that I really enjoyed was when Thor was on the Guardian ship.
Yes.
And he finds out Gamora is Thanos's daughter. He's like, Thanos killed my brother. And he goes over and you think he's going to kind of get in her face. And he's just like, families are tough, aren't they? And I'm like, pats her on the shoulder. And I was like, that's so Thor. I totally know all these movies. Like, it just rewards.
That is so Thor.
Being so entrenched in all this.
Yeah. Well, not just that, Brian. When Peter Quill starts like being all Peter Quill with Thor, you're like, that's so Peter Quill.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, are you mocking me? Are you mocking me? You know? Right. And the little you know, we're talking about the Guardians, the little beat where Drax thinks he's invisible.
Right.
And then Mantis like, hi Drax. Like, and I was thinking that I was like, that's a moment that would have been cut out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I love the fact that the Russo brothers, who we haven't even mentioned, by the way, the Russo brothers, who did a great job here. This feels like their third time out. Like, they know this. They're like, we got this, you know. But that moment with Drax, like, eating the nuts or whatever he's doing, and that would have been cut out in another movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a deleted scene, but I like that they left it in because it's just these little pieces that allow us to feel it more as we work up to the ending.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Glenn.
Yeah.
I need to ask you about what you thought of Bruce Banner's arc in this movie, and specifically the lack of Hulk presence in this film other than the beginning.
Well, you're not the first person to ask. Apparently, I'm the go-to person when it comes to this question.
Well, I mean, just by way of context here, Glenn, you should talk about what a big, incredible Hulk fan you are.
I'm a lifelong Hulk fan. He's my favorite Marvel character. I just love the character. It was my privilege to write him for a while. So, I've read virtually every Hulk story ever published. So, yeah, I'm a Hulk guy. I was disappointed by the lack of Hulk. I thought it was great to see him fighting Thanos, you know, going toe to toe with Thanos at the beginning. I thought that was great. I was disappointed. I was fooled because I saw the commercials where you see the Hulk and the rest of the Avengers running through the jungles of Wakanda. Apparently that was a fake out. And I have to give kudos to Disney and Marvel for completely pulling the rug out from under us. but I was talking to another Hulk, a big Hulk fan the other day, who was livid. I think that's a pretty good word. And he expected me to be livid as well. And my response was, think about it. The Hulk is a child. And he just had his ass handed to him by Thanos, which has never happened before. Yes. When has the Hulk ever really been beaten the way Thanos beats him in this movie? Of course he's not going to want to come out.
Right.
And so from a story standpoint, it does make sense. From an aesthetic standpoint, yeah, it's a little bit disappointing because you want to see the Hulk, or at least I want to see the Hulk taking part in this adventure. But there's a great line from Banner towards the end of the movie, or maybe it was the middle of the movie. I can't remember anymore, but he says, come on, I know you love to like show up at the last minute, but come on, I need you now.
This is the last minute.
yeah.
And I thought that was very meta, and I thought it was very telling, and I thought it was very clever. But from a story standpoint, it does make sense. Maybe not so much the Bill Mantlow Hulk, who was just a creature of complete rage and wouldn't be scared in any way, shape, or form. But that's not necessarily the Hulk that they're doing in these movies. But it's still valid from a conceptual standpoint.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think also it does a couple things from both a narrative and meta-narrative perspective. Is it gives Banner agency as something other than the guy who we put up with until the Hulk shows up.
Mm. Right.
You know, because the fact that Banner's not like hiding in the fortress, you know, the Wakandan fortress, he's out on the field risking his life when it is actually at risk. Right.
So
it makes him a hero in his own right. And I mean,
Which he should be.
Right, exactly. And it lets I think this is the most time we've ever spent with Mark Ruffalo as being Mark Ruffalo in the movie. And that's really important too. I mean, when you look at it, he is the through line that connects all the different factions, because he goes from Thor to Tony Stark to Captain America. He's the thread that ties it all together.
Right.
You know,
I will say, I just have to say, because you mentioned, you know, hiding in the fortress in Wakanda. I would have to say that Okoye, played by Danai Gurira, has the best damn line in the whole movie.
Yes.
And she delivers it so perfectly. That was what I was sort of like, you know, sort of swooning over after the movie was over, that one moment. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
With Scarlet Witch, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Scarlet Witch has been with Vision this whole time. She goes out onto the field and just demolishes them. And then Okoye is just like, what was she, like, I forget what she says exactly. What's the,
like, why was she up there the whole time?
Yeah. She has this perfect, yeah. She knows exactly the right degree of snark to put.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
You know, I think it's very interesting that as we, you know, head into the next movie. And by the way, actually, this is something that became a bit of a topic where I said in my review, I'm like, look, people should know going in that the story doesn't end. If you're going in expecting something climactic and culminative, which is, I think the marketing, I get it. I get why they're doing it, but I think it's doing a disservice because I think people are expecting the series finale, but this is like the season ending cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the analogy I've made is, you know, back in 1990, my family and I, we lived in Saudi Arabia. We used to visit the States for like 2 weeks out of the year. So we were visiting Chicago and we watched the season finale of Star Trek: The Next Generation. All right.
Uh huh.
Glenn already knows where this is going. So the Borg show up. They capture Captain Picard, And then Captain Picard is turned into a Borg. Okay, now I'm 9 going on 10, or I'm 10 going on 11. And then it's to be continued. And I'm like, son of a bitch, right? and I bear in mind, I don't even understand the concept of a season finale and the notion of a cliffhanger season finale. It's just not really in my awareness. So then I watch the next week, assuming it's going to be part two. And it's like, no, that's going to be like 4 months from now. And I'm like, what? Now, bear in mind, we go back to Saudi Arabia now, right? Now, this is before the internet. So I, for an entire year, I didn't even know if Captain Picard was captain of the Enterprise anymore.
Mm-hmm.
For an entire year. And then I came back and he's still the captain. I'm like, okay, I guess they got him back. But I never saw part two of that, right? So to me, this is that. This is Best of Both Worlds. That's the episode title, part one. And I think that's something that Disney is sitting on, because if they called it Infinity War Part One, which was what they originally announced it at, I think a lot of people would be like, I'll just wait until Part Two comes out,
right,
and I'll binge it, and then we wouldn't be talking about the biggest opening weekend in history.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it, right? However, that being said, I don't think it constitutes a spoiler to be like, look, the story does not end. It's going to wrap up next year.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of shit I took for this, guys.
I saw a little bit of this.
Now, look, I've said this before, and I said this about Star Wars movies, where if you are describing broadly what happens, it's not a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say the story is going to be wrapped up next year, how is that a spoiler? That's a good spoiler, if anything, because you're like, awesome, there's more coming.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Am I wrong here? Seriously, walk me off the ledge, because I'm...
I'll walk you off the ledge. May 1980, I go in...
I know where you're going.
Oh, yeah. You know where I'm going. May 1980, I'm 10 years old. I didn't even know there was going to be another Star Wars movie until about 3 weeks before the movie came out. I go in, okay? I walk out thinking there was no ending. Then I get home and realize I'm going to have to wait 3 years to get a resolution. I don't feel sorry for any of these people who were giving you shit, Zachy.
Thank you.
3 years.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's like being mad if you're told, hey, the Fellowship of the Ring is just one of three parts. Like, well, come on, you know. But it's weird because the other thing I'm hearing, and I disagree with this too, is people who are like, well, it's not really a cliffhanger because this is actually Thanos' story and he achieved his goal. And I'm like, shut the hell up. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, okay, obviously, like, that's you're bending yourself backwards in the other direction.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I'm like, are you good? That's it then. We're done now. Let's not watch any more of these. I mean, give me a break, you know?
I suppose if you're rooting for Thanos, then this is it for you. I mean, don't go.
Well, I'll talk to my kid because, you know.
Yeah. He's like, I'm done. The story is complete now.
Oh my gosh. Are there any other beats that we missed talking about? I mean, gosh, there's so many, you know what? I really liked, when Peter Quill finds out that Gamora is dead.
Yeah.
Mm.
That, I mean, just the way that played out where they're at this moment where just another second and they're going to get the, you know, it reminded me of, like in Lord of the Rings, when Elrond is like, you know, all Isildur had to do was just drop that one moment, and we would the Middle Earth would have been spared, you know.
Yeah,
it's like if at that moment he could have just, you know, Tony Stark is pleading with him like, don't engage, don't do it, and because of that, and why? Because he loved her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, I just thought it was a great moment.
It was, and in fact, you know, it kind of accomplishes what George Lucas tried to do with Jar Jar Binks, and it didn't come off. Jar Jar Binks out of stupidity, basically, but out of ignorance more than stupidity, makes a pivotal decision that plunges the galaxy into darkness for the next two, three decades. And Peter Quill, who's also kind of a screw up,
he's the Jar Jar of the MCU.
Yeah, just to a certain extent, that's his calling card. He's a schmuck.
He's the goofball. And,
yeah, and this key decision that he makes, because it all lands on him. That moment, that's a key moment, and he makes a decision that gives Thanos victory. Wow. And I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, no, that's totally true.
Yeah, I the first time I saw it, I think I saw the mechanics of it a little too much, and I was a little frustrated because I saw it coming, and I was like, it's just happening because it has to happen, and they can't let Thanos win here, and I went with it. But the second time I saw it, I was more into the performance, and because I knew what was happening, I was like, oh, they pulled that off really well, actually. No, I think, believed him.
I think Chris – where Thanos is like, I had to, or something like that. And the way Chris Pratt plays it, where he's almost like whispering. He's like, no, you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly thought the Gamora Star-Lord relationship in this was really, really well done. At that moment when right before Thanos takes her and she's like, I love you more than anything, I believed it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, it feels like, I mean, this is not a great comparison because I think Empire Strikes Back does it better, but it does feel a little bit like when Princess Leia says she loves Han Solo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you finally like hear it. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you commenting on that Drax comedic beat earlier, you know, where he's watching them. And I like that moment, especially because when she was asking him to kill her, if the time came,
yes.
You're so used to quips coming out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. I was sort of hoping, I was a little on edge. I didn't want a joke in that moment.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't, you know, and he kind of whispers like, okay.
Yeah.
Like if that's, and so it was nice to get that completed moment with them. And then you get to put the little punchline at the end to relieve some of the tension with Drax at the end. So, yeah, that I really liked how that all played out. And it really solidified them.
And that, you know? that's a good way to segue into something. You know, people complain about the humor in these movies.
Yeah.
In MCU, it's sort of like internet shorthand. Oh, they're always jokey. And, again, that's something I do push back against. I actually really liked the way humor was used in this because it's not overwhelming. It's never puncturing the seriousness of the movie. It does puncture the seriousness of moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stakes are the stakes. They never are anything other than that. But we have these little fun things like Peter Dinklage, who we haven't mentioned at all, as the giant dwarf, which, I mean, you got to love the – come on. That's great. Come on. Just having – right?
Really? Brilliant.
It is. Yeah. But, you know, that moment where Thor has to hold the iris of the kiln open, right? And Peter Dinklage as the dwarf is like, it'll kill you. And Thor is like, only if I die. And normally that's where you cut.
Yeah.
But then we cut back to Peter Dinklage who's like, well, that's what killing you, that's what it means.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that was just something that Peter Dinklage just like said, and they just thought it was funny, so they, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And just like the little quips too at the beginning, I really liked was when Tony Stark's trying to get Banner to turn into the Hulk, and he's like, "Come on, man, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizard."
Dude, even before that, the very first scene on the ship on the Asgardian ship, when Loki like reveals that he has the Tesseract. Mm-hmm. And Thor's just like, oh, brother, you're the worst.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why I liked that, because it's like, 'cause somebody complained about that. Oh, it's like this thing, a serious thing, and you have a joke right after. I'm like, no, it's in character. Thor would say that.
Yep.
Right?
And we've been there. We know why he would say that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Glenn?
I love when Shuri was working on the Vision. And she looks up at Banner and she says, well, why didn't you just, you know, do this? And Banner was like, we didn't think of it at the time. And she's like, well, you should have.
Yeah.
That, by the way, you talk about building in a back door. Like, to me, if we were to see the Vision again, it's right there in Shuri's lab.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, to me, as effective as the Vision's death was, I feel like he's, if any character can come back, who has, you know, minus the ones who are dusted, who we expect will come back, it's the Vision.
Right.
Yeah. And then just one other I have to throw out there that I really loved, and the successful melding of all these worlds was in Wakanda on the battlefield, where Groot's like, "I am Groot." Captain America's like, "I am Steve Rogers." That was so good.
Well, and I like that Thor speaks Groot, because it was an elective on Asgard.
Right. Right. Hilarious.
Yeah.
So Brian, having seen it twice, what were some moments that that maybe we haven't discussed that on second viewing that jumped out at you more, or that you interpreted in a different way?
That's a good question. I don't know if I'm prepared for this. I'm actually sort of amazed at how much I'm remembering actually this morning.
We've definitely covered a lot of ground in this discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, well, if I can shift just a little bit here, I have some questions for the experts.
Yes.
That were given to me that I'm happy to pass along to you guys.
There's one expert, and that's Glenn, and I'm sort of
a... Oh, please. All right.
Yeah. So I saw this with, you know, one of my very favorite people in the world and regular listener of the show, Federica, who Zachy's familiar with.
Hi, Federica.
She and a friend were in town visiting, and they had a few questions after it was over. And this is coming from people who were big fans of the film, just some questions they had, though, afterwards. So they asked, thoughts on Doctor Strange on the ship, and he says, how are we going to get back to Earth? Is there a reason why he couldn't just create a portal?
I suppose he could, but, you know, it's interesting because the comic books and the movie versions are not necessarily one and the same. So what the comic book version could do, theoretically, the movie version may not be able to do. So I don't know if it's easy for him to do. I mean, theoretically, yes, because we saw in Doctor Strange that he could create a portal and go from New York to Nepal and something like that. But they're in outer space now, so I don't know if it works that way.
Is there a distance to his portals that he can create, for example?
You know what? I would hope so, because you don't want Doctor Strange to be so all-powerful, because otherwise he could just show up at the last minute in any story and wave his magic wand,
right,
and then boom. So I think I'd like to think that there are limitations.
And by the way, Brian, speaking of Doctor Strange, you may recall that for several weeks now I've been saying that he would be a fatality in Infinity War.
That's right.
So I'm going to claim the win on a technicality. We know he's going to be back, but you know what? He died in Infinity War, so suck it, y'all.
So point Zachy.
That's right.
Okay, I have one more question here from them. Now that Thanos has killed half the universe's population, does he have any plans for some sort of dictatorship over them, or are there any more end goals for him other than population control?
I think Thanos is going to open up like a shave ice stand on whatever that planet is.
That's actually an easier question to answer. No, because Thanos hasn't really been about, at least the Thanos that I know from the comics, he's never really been about ruling and conquering. It's been all about worshiping death. And they kind of shifted that a little bit in the movies. He's not so much of a death worshiper, and that he's more of a balance worshiper. We see in the movie that he's all about restoring the cosmic balance. I think that what's going to happen, what's going to be, you know, probably one of the key character arcs for Thanos in the next movie, is that now that he's achieved what he's wanted for so long, he's going to be empty. And he's going to have to find a new purpose, because what do you do once you accomplish everything you've ever wanted to do, what achieve? And so I think that's going to be a key part of the next movie.
And by the way, just to sort of elaborate on what Glenn is saying when he describes Thanos as a death worshiper, like in the literal sense, in the Marvel cosmology, death is personified by a woman who Thanos is in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to win her affection, he says, I'll prove how much I love you. I'm going to find these gemstones. I'll traverse the universe to find them. I'll gather them. I'll gain control over all of existence, and I'll wipe out half of reality just to prove how much I love you.
Hmm.
That's the way they did it in the comics. And one, I mean, it's easy to see why the movies went in a different direction.
And that
was something that I think, again, first viewing, I had trouble sort of wrapping my brain around why Thanos wants this. I think second viewing, it went down a little bit easier.
I agree with that, by the way.
In terms of that motivation being a little nebulous.
Yeah, the first time, because then I'm like, yeah, but why?
Exactly.
You know, and I understood it, I think, a little bit more the second time, especially with that last shot of
yes.
him sitting there, you know, in his tranquil homeland again. Like, he feels like, yeah, this is what I was trying to do, and I did it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, yeah. I agree with that.
It kind of reminded me of when they turned the Batman villain, Ra's al Ghul. He became like an eco-terrorist because he was trying to restore balance to the Earth. And so here it's Thanos trying to do the same thing, except on a cosmic scale.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Also, we haven't mentioned this at all, but the post-credit scene, we should probably.
Oh, yeah.
So Brian, again, your familiarity is primarily with the movie universe. So as Nick Fury is there, and they stage it masterfully where you see everyone starts getting dusted, and here's Nick Fury. He dials on this like old ass pager, and then the camera just zooms in as we're like sending. When that symbol comes up, did that have any meaning for you at all?
I'm embarrassed with you guys in your presence. No, I did not.
Okay,
and my theater went nuts.
Your theater went nuts, really? Oh, okay.
Yep. I was like, okay, Google.
What about for you, Glenn? I mean, I know it did for you, but like in your audience,
a few people were like, oh, like that.
Huh.
You could hear behind me, people went, whoa, you know, like, and a couple of claps. I think most of the people it was a very mellow Friday morning audience that
sure,
I started
sure.
with. So, but there it got a few responses, but not this overwhelming. I smiled.
Sure.
Yeah.
So obviously the symbol that we see, so we know Nick Fury right before he disappears, he's calling Captain Marvel, who we're going to see her origin next March via the movie starring Brie Larson and a youthified Sam Jackson, and that's set in the 90s. So again, when I'm honestly, man, the way these Marvel people, the way they stage this stuff, it's so brilliant because we'll get Captain Marvel's origin. We'll be fully familiar with her. She'll be just as beloved next year as like Black Panther is right now, right?
Yep.
And then she shows up in Infinity War 2 just in time to blow people's minds.
Yep. Right.
You know? Now, if I were to guess, and Glenn, check me on this, I feel like they're setting Captain Marvel up to be the Adam Warlock role in Infinity War Part 2.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. And it's funny you mention that because I originally thought that the Vision was going to basically – going forward was going to be the Adam Warlock sort of stand-in in these movies just because of the way he was created in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
So it would be really interesting to see if they kind of split that role between the Vision and Captain Marvel. But I think you may be onto something.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that Warlock exists in this universe because that's alluded to in one of the post-credit scenes in Guardians 2. But
yeah,
I can't imagine that he'll just show up in Infinity War Part 2 and it'll matter to people. You know, I think Captain Marvel, they're very deliberately scheduling these movies the way they are.
Yeah.
To have that impact. The other thought, by the way, that I had, Glenn, and this only occurred to me yesterday because last night I was kind of thumbing through the Infinity Gauntlet comic book, is one of the key plot points in the comic is that Nebula gets a hold of the Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so in the comic, Brian, Nebula is actually a woman who is claiming she's Thanos' granddaughter. So she's nothing like the character that we see in the movies. However, what one of the things Thanos does when he gets the gauntlet is he takes Nebula and he, like, he horribly disfigures her. And just to, because he can, because he's like, how dare this person say she's connected to me, right? However, she's still aware enough to get a hold of the gauntlet during a moment of weakness, and then she goes back to her true form. And I'm like, I can fully imagine that, because Thanos has done that to her in the movies. He's turned her into, just for his pleasure. So I can see a scenario where Nebula gets a hold of the gauntlet, and we see her as Karen Gillan, the way she actually looks.
Right.
For once in these movies. I could totally see that being a part of what happens next, because she's still around, by the way. Right?
Yeah.
And I...
Do we know for sure that she wasn't dusted?
I believe at... I was paying attention yesterday, and her and Tony Stark are the only ones left on Titan.
Okay. All right.
So, and I think that's partially by design. By the way, other thing that's really interesting, the characters, for the most part, the characters who are left standing are the original Avengers.
Right.
And we got Cap, Iron Man, Thor, Banner, Black Widow. Rhodey's still there, but we haven't seen Clint. I think Clint is probably still out there. So we've got, in other words, the original team. So
right. One last hurrah.
Say again?
One last hurrah.
Exactly right. You know, I think they laid the pieces out in a very specific way with that in mind.
Yep.
You know?
It's brilliant. It really is brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, when you just said Clint, I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't see Hawkeye.
Right. That's right. You know? And by the way, I mean, we've got Infinity War 2 or whatever the hell it's going to be called a year from now. We got two Marvel movies between now and then. But look at when they're set. Ant-Man is set before and during Infinity War.
Oh.
Right? And Captain Marvel is like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very deliberately making sure we have no idea
what's happening.
What's happening. Which also makes me wonder, a total unconnected tangent here, what's going to happen with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., if anything? Is it over? If it does come back, when will it be set? You know?
All good questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are questions that we'll have to wait for, if not a year from now, a different time from now. But, man, what a rip-roaring discussion. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, this was a pleasure.
Very cool having you.
Yeah, no, it's a thrill because, like I said, I've been catching up on all of your podcasts for the last few months, and I am such a fan of you two, you know, going at this stuff together. So it's a thrill to be able to join you for this.
Well, hopefully what this means is we've now extracted a commitment that you got to come back next year when Infinity War Part 2 comes out.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah. We're going to put a little thing at the end. Glenn Greenberg will return. But also I mentioned this up top, but Glenn and I will be recording a commentary track, as you heard during the show. Glenn is Incredible Hulk fan number one, and I couldn't let the 10th anniversary of the Incredible Hulk movie pass without talking through it with Glenn. So that will be coming up in a couple months on the Nostalgia Theater podcast. So please, if you don't subscribe to that show, please jump over and do subscribe if you are so inclined.
And if you don't subscribe, you'll make me angry.
And you don't, yeah, you even like him when he's angry. So as we wind things down here, Glenn, why don't you tell the movie film listeners where they can find you online and where you hang your hat?
I hang my hat at my Twitter account, which is at Glenn L. Greenberg, GlennLGreenberg. You'd be surprised how many people screw up that spelling. And I'm doing a lot of different stuff, a lot of freelance. I have an article on sci-fi.com about the 50th anniversary of 2001: A Space Odyssey that I'm very, very proud of. So check that out. It's at sci-fi.com. Just type in sci-fi and Glenn Greenberg. Google it. It'll come up. I interviewed Gary Lockwood, Keir Dulay, and Douglas Trumbull. It was a thrill. Very proud of it. So check it out.
That's very cool.
I just wrote that down. I'm going to look that up.
Oh, right, cool. After this.
Yeah.
Brian, how about you?
You can check my work out. I write for a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which airs on Disney and Disney Junior. And it's about puppies going on adventures. And if it sounds like something you'll enjoy, I guarantee it you will.
I was just watching that yesterday with my boys. I always have to preface that and say, hey, this is the show that my friends work on. And it was not an episode that you wrote, Brian, but every episode says executive produced by Sean Coyle, our good friend. So,
Yep.
I get like, I get to bask in you guys' reflected glory for the few seconds of your names appearing in the credits, you know?
Yeah.
As for me, you can find me on my website, zakiscorner.com, that's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter, that's also my Instagram, and I am all around. My review of Avengers Infinity War is up right now at my website, so please do check that out. And summer movie season has now moved back a week, I guess, because we've got plenty of big stuff coming up. We'll, in our next episode, or one of our next episodes, actually, I don't know when it comes out, but we'll be talking about Josh Brolin as another comic book character because, of course, Deadpool 2 comes out in just a few weeks. And from there until August, it's a rip-roaring movie fest, as we know from years past. It's crazy, Brian, how many years we've been doing this now, you know?
I know.
It's kind of like, here we go again. Another summer movie season's already upon us.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. We also have coming up in a few weeks our commentary track for Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and a few weeks after that, our commentary track for Jurassic Park. So lots of fun stuff coming movie film-wise and obviously over at Nostalgia Theater. So once again, on behalf of our special guest, Glenn Greenberg, and my partner, Brian Hall, my name is Zaki Hassan. This has been Movie Film 146. And by the way, folks, if you have anything you want to tell us about what you thought about Infinity War, you can email us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com or hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast. Go to iTunes, leave a review, leave a star rating, let people know what you think. And until next time, we'll catch you later.
Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Film Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zaki and